On this basis, the Gemara asked, how can an empty mind say that the Shadim know the future, when even the ministering angels do not know it? Say rather thus, they hear from behind the curtain of heaven what is about to happen. The three things which in which they are comparable to human beings are that they eat and drink, procreate, and die as the human being. Now, the cause of death generally is the separation of the components of the body, this being true of all kinds of bodies, whether they are composed of the four elements like humans or only of two like Shadim. The reason for their ability to fly is because of the likeness of the two elements, fire and air, of which they are composed, as may be seen in the case of fowl, in which, because the elements in fire and air dominate over small parts of the other two elements, the fowl can hover in the air and fly. Surely then, the above-mentioned creatures that have nothing in them of the heavy elements, earth and water, possess great hovering power in the air to be able to fly tirelessly. The matter of eating, mentioned above, means that they're deriving nourishment from the moisture of water and the odors of fire, something like fire that licked up with the water that was in the trench, from the story. This is the purpose of the burnings which necromancers perform to the demons. The reason for their need to eat is that the fire in the air causes the drying up of their bodies, which must therefore be restored, just as man's need for food is due to the depletion in his body. As for that which has been said concerning their hearing what is about to happen, it is because in the course of their flying on high, they become aware of things that are about to happen from the powerful forces contained in the atmosphere, these being the princes of the quiver. It is also there, the princes of the quiver. It is from there that those who have wings tell matters, of the future, as has been tested by enchanters. And as I will explain in its place with the help of God. But neither of them know what is about to happen, for many days to come, or for times that are far off. In other words, they can predict the future, but only like the weather forecasters for the next 2 or 3 days. Their ability to predict further than a short distance into the future is, but they can only inform what's about to happen in the near future, as he knows from their account is that they gain knowledge from the Shadim or what is about to be to come. Therefore, Unculus rendered the verse, they sacrificed unto demons, lo Eloha, no gods, as they sacrificed unto demons in which there is no utility. Because Unculus probably meant the same as the Rambam, namely that it's a complete nonsense. But he says it's not useful because you can't predict more than a short time into the future. But a day before the lottery, for example, having a knowledge of a day in advance would be pretty useful, it seems. Meaning that there's no need for them, as they do not prevent harm that is destined to come, neither do they do anything productive, nor do they inform of times far off, so a person may knowingly guard himself. It is thus that, which is the sense of the expression, lo aloha, which is, as if it said, no power or rulership. For the word Elohim is an expression of strength and power. Thus the verse is stating that demons have no strength or power whatsoever, and hence there is no need for them, for they cannot do evil, neither in them is there to do good. Does that answer your question?
More than I anticipated.
Now, you know,
No.
All right, look, I must say, I will read to you two comments that Rabbi Chevel makes on these things, because the Rambam here is sort of giving you, based on the Aristotelian theory of the four elements, some physical explanation of the constitution of demons and of human beings. On the other hand, a little bit earlier in the discussion of the Sa'ir la'Azazel, the Ramban adds that the word Azazel is a compound one. There are many such cases. Thus the matter is explained, unless you pursue a further investigation from the subject to that of the separate intelligences and how the spirits are affected by the offering, being known through the study of necromancy, while that of the separate intelligence is known by certain allusions of the Torah to those who understand their secrets. I cannot explain more,
For I would have to close the mouths of those who claim to be wise in the study of nature, following after that Greek, meaning Aristotle, who denied everything except that which could be perceived by him through the physical senses. And he and his wicked disciples were so proud as to suspect that whatever he could not conceive of through his reasoning is not true. But this is the Ramban's general anti-scientific attitude. Remember, he says at the end of both that anyone who believes in the existence of the laws of nature has no part amongst the children of Israel. Now I'm going to quote without comment two comments by Rabbi Chevelle on this. You can give it any interpretation you like. The attitude of these philosophers, that is, that Greek, a certain professor, he used a reference to me in the attack on me by the OU. The attitude of these philosophers, who claimed that whatever their minds could not understand was untrue, was especially obnoxious to Ramban. History has fully borne him out on this matter. For there are literally myriads of matters which the medieval scholastic conditions that they were by Aristotelian concepts of the universe considered impossible and are now proven facts. And who can foretell the future of our present-day concepts of the universe? There are obviously facts which lie beyond the present-day grasp of the human mind which will someday become firmly established. To deny their possibility just because we do not understand them was to the Ramban a manifestation of arrogance. And now I'll read what he has to say here on the explanation of the demons. Ramban now begins to explain the text quoted on the basis of certain scientific concepts that were prevalent in his time. A preparatory word is in place. The serious student will not look upon these concepts with an eye for criticism. The theory that the whole physical world is founded upon various combinations of four elements was an Aristotelian legacy which ruled man's minds for millennia. The extension of that theory into the elusive world of the spirit was logical. That scientists today have moved to other theories to explain the universe and various phenomena of life has no bearing upon the explanations which were accepted in the past, for who can foretell what knowledge will do to the established truths of today? The important thing in the Ramban's presentation of this whole abstruse subject is his final conclusion that only God in his providence exercises power over man's destiny. Now, what Rabbi Chevelle meant by either of these two things, I will leave it to you. Let's continue. Let me also add something which we may want to go into, and that is, it is the Ramban's analysis of Achrei Mot, of the sacrificial service associated with Yom Kippur, incorrect. Well, the Ramban says that the purpose of the Sa'ir La'Azazel is to propitiate the demons.
Independent of the general discussion about sacrifice.
Yes.
You think what?
I think that's the simple meaning of the text.
Not only is it the simple meaning of the text, I mean, it's corroborated by all of the archaeological evidence. In other words, what we're faced with here is a rather difficult religious and philosophical problem. Namely, I come down completely on the side of the Rambam on the issue of rationalism versus belief in all of this stuff. On the other hand, to deny the fact that a substantial chunk of something even as central as the Yom Kippur service is built in terms of a culture which did at one time believe in the existence of demons and therefore the propitiatory sacrifices and the existence of a scapegoat for which we see comparable practices in the surrounding culture, is most likely correct. So the Ramban, in terms of his explanation of the Bible, is probably correct. The Ramban, in his position of attacking rationalism and defending all of these sorts of things, such as necromancy and what have you, is something that we have to fight against.
He was a man of his time.
Was the Rambam a man of his time, or was the Rambam a man well ahead of his time?
Actually, you could take any of the sacrifices and try to rationalize it, wouldn't make sense.
Well, you know what the Rambam says about all the sacrifices.
That's what I said. There's nothing different about this than...
Well, except that what I'm saying is we're dealing specifically with the issue of the existence or non-existence of demons. And the Ramban is saying that the purpose of the scapegoat, the Sa'ir La'azazel, is to propitiate the demons this one time in the year and get rid of them and not sacrifice them any other time, indicating that therefore they must exist. Whereas the Rambam would say that this was a common false superstition which the people could not be weaned away from at the time of the Torah, and therefore it made sense in its cultural context.
The masses.
So a couple questions I have is,
both the Ramban and the Ramban acknowledge for the purpose of propitiating demons. It's just the motivation. I understand. This is how it's understood in the culture.
So when some of these Gedolim speaking, are they part of that culture, or are they appeasing the masses who are
the Ramban? You can have some doubts about.
So some are clear, right?
You can have some doubts about the Radvaz. I don't have any, but you do. But there's no doubt about what the Ramban's belief system is. The Ramban believed in necromancy. He believed in demons. He believed in the existence of black magic.
Which would explain my second question, which is, if you were to believe that they didn't believe but were accommodating an idea that the people would not let go of.
And who's they? Who's they?
No, I'm saying some of these, whomever might say, I don't believe in it, but it exists amongst the people. Why don't you see an effort to wean the people? Why don't you see a concurrent effort to say,
that effort is the prohibition of it.
Yes. Yeah. But remember, there's also a bit of apologetics here. For example, the Me'iri maintains that when the Gemara makes compromises with various superstitious practices, like explaining why it is permissible to have exactly four glasses of wine and not worry about the evil consequences of an even number, the Me'iri says that you remember that all of this is complete nonsense, but some of this nonsense was so ingrained and relatively harmless that the rabbis... of course, I don't believe for a moment that the Me'iri is accurate in saying that the rabbis of the Talmud did not believe in much of these things that they seem to believe in. In other words, the Me'iri himself, I think, is engaging in a bit of apologetics and explanatory. So I think the situation is more complicated.
But how about our prayers today? We start so that we talk about going back to the temple in Jerusalem. And, it's not the Osu, but the Naaseh.
Right.
On all the components, whether it's Shabbat or whether it's Rosh Chodesh. We're perpetuating this.
It's certainly a problem. The only person that had the courage to try to deal with this was Rabbi Kaplan, of course. But he ran into a lot of objection. And there's a certain amount of mixed feeling as to what you want and what you don't want. I mean, do you really want to reinstitute animal sacrifice today?
The Rambam? When you talk about weaning people away, the idea of weaning is eventually you stop.
Right.
But the Rambam, I've never had a credit for the emissions really stopping.
Prayer is a substitute for kavana.
But did the Rambam believe in prayer?
I
as a duty or as an application.
Did the Rambam believe in propitiatory prayer? Should you ask God to help you out when you're in trouble? The Rambam, remember, in his famous passage about sacrifices, also says, where is it? I was going to take a while to find it. Remember what he says. He says remember what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that since sacrifice was so ingrained in people in those days, then if a prophet would come and tell the people that, and that was the only known way of worshiping God, that if a prophet would then come and tell the populace that one should stop sacrifices because that's not an appropriate way of worshiping God, it would be akin to a prophet coming today and telling us that we shouldn't pray to God to grant us our wishes, but should engage only in meditation. Now, what did he mean by that? I think it's pretty clear his intention in that.
It doesn't say that you began to pray on it, but ask God to help us do that.
Read it as you like.
Even meditation is a type of prayer. Yep.
In the enshrined description of the Azazia, the official service, in the Mishnaic description in Pitzer service when they are allowed there, I quote that people hit the animal right and carry their sin. What is the cash of sacrifice to fear? It was carrying away the sin.
But getting the demons out of the temple was presumably a part of what the original meaning was.
You refer to a similar thing in other cultures. What are they?
Isn't there a whole folklore around the demons building the Beit HaMikdash?
Mm-hmm. You have in Babylonian culture, even the word shade, sedu, occurs there, and the propitious exercises there, also in Egyptian culture. If you look in the article on Day of Atonement in the Encyclopedia Judaica, you have that at home. You can really see it. I have it here, but my printer sort of failed. But I wanted to get to something else, which was important. I'm just taking a while to find the sacrifices.
The special sacrifices of Stephen Cohen and Marshall Concern are done on a short sacrifice, all right? But it's also done today, so there's a passion for that in the administration.
Give me this joke. Here, I don't like that. I'm told that there's no job. The rub was very strong about it.
Seder Avoda is one of his strong discussions in the novel's forum.
very, very particular body of the ritual.
All right, but I want to get something else that I did prepare that I will just take you through. I quoted the Rambam correctly. I mean, I just will not find it very fast this way. But I want to read something else in the Rambam, which is very important. The Gemara says, Kol sheyesh bo mishum rufua, ein bo mishum darkei hamoed. Anything which is medicine doesn't count as magic, and therefore is permissible. Now let me read what the Rambam has to say. In order to keep people away from all magical practices, it has been prohibited to observe any of their usages, even those attaching to agricultural and pastoral activities and other activities of this kind. I mean, all that is said to be useful but is not required by speculation concerning nature and takes its course, in their opinion, in accordance with occult properties. This is the meaning of its dictum, and you shall not work in the customs of the nation. These being what are called by the sages, may be blessed Amorite usages, for they are branches of magical practices, inasmuch as they are things not required by reasoning concerning nature, and lead to magical practices that of necessity seek support in astrological notions. Accordingly, the matter is turned into a glorification of and the worship of the stars. They say explicitly, all that pertains to medicine does not pertain to Amorite usages. They mean by this that all that is required by speculation concerning nature is permitted, whereas other practices are forbidden. So the Rambam takes the phrase kol sheyesh bo mishum refua, ein bo mishum darkei hamori. The phrase mishum refua means based on scientific evidence. Anything that you can deduce scientifically is not magic. It is for this reason, after it has been said, a tree which lets its fruit fat is loaded with stones that is marked with red chalk, this practice is criticized, and so on. It is thus made clear that it could be forbidden to mark it with red chalk or to do similar things that are not required by reason. They similarly say, with reference to a fetus of consecrated animals, which should be animal. From this they conclude by analogy, you must not consider as a difficulty certain things which they have permitted. For in those times, these things were considered to derive from experience, and accordingly pertain to medicine, and entered into the same class, etc., etc. So in other words, the Rambam has two categories of what is permissible, and it seems to me, again, this is a completely modern view, which would be acceptable. Anything which is based on scientific theory is not magical practice, or anything, any medication which has been verified by experiment, even if you don't know why it works. Those two things are legitimate medicine. All other things are prohibited as astrological.
So we now have a school of thought in the medical world that says prayer has efficacy, right, in terms of a treatment,
right.
So we've come full circle.
If I remember correctly, the Rambam wasn't on that side of the case of this gold coin of the lion that's seemed to cure the Pope.
Right. So let's recall that case, because that's a very important case. We're talking now about the Ramban, not the Rambam.
But the Ramban said that the science changes.
There was this famous quote, this is a famous case, of Arnold of Villanova, famous doctor who had to deal with kidney stones. And he invented a cure for a kidney stone, which consisted of making a golden medal with the figure of a lion on it, made during the period of the constellation of the lion, and then you apply it to the back of the patient. It works only for the right kidney,
because you have a kidney stone in your right kidney and you apply this, then this is supposed to cure the patient. And the famous case was that he actually cured the Pope by this particular medication. Now, of course, this raised a huge amount of controversy in the Christian circles, and by osmosis was raised into the Jewish circles. Is it permissible to engage in this type of astrological medicine, or is this to be regarded as magic? Now, there's no question that the Rambam would have no, Maimonides would have no truck with this whatsoever. He would prohibit this completely. He would dispute the... Because obviously, we don't believe it works. We have certain types of controls, and even though the notion of what constitutes scientific evidence of something working has only been developed relatively recently, I think that the Rambam's objection to this would be that since he had an innate aversion to astrology and astrological medicine altogether, he would reject it unless there was overwhelming evidence of the existence of such a thing. Very problematic. Very problematic. But now, as you say, they asked the Ramban. The people from Montpellier were confused on this issue. Chuvasha hishavti le Montpellier. This is a tshuva of the Rashba, famous tshuva to the top of the Gimel. Kvodcha yakricheni umalatcha migidri tautzieni. Kol yamai gadarti ba'adi velo yitzei chutz migidri lebal asim didori b'masha rabubo ha-hakirot. I want to avoid anything which involves detailed philosophical speculation. I don't want to get into this hot discussion without some guidance as well. You're grabbing me by the neck. על פי כן, דברים אלו שאמרת אין ליבי מחיל חקירתם, כי רבם מבוכתם ונפלאה ממני אמיתתם, לומר, מצאתי, etc. etc. יש לו, etc. etc. He wants, but he can't avoid it. So they asked him this question, is this permissible? Now, first of all, he says the Ramban actually used that medication in his medical practice. And therefore, the Ramban being the teacher of the Rashba, using Arnold of Villanova's medication, certainly means that it must be permissible. Secondly, he now attacks the Rambam. The Rambam says, gave us two explanations of what is kol sheyesh bo mishum refuah ein bo mishum darkei hamoed, and these explanations are mutually contradictory. One explanation is an explanation that anything for which you have a scientific explanation is not magic, and therefore that the word refuah in the Talmud doesn't mean medicine, but it means science. And the other explanation is that the word refuah means that something that's been tested and works, even if you don't know, right? I mean, we don't know why aspirin works, do we? I think even to this day we don't know why aspirin works. At least I didn't. But there's empirical evidence that it works, but we haven't any theory as to why it works. Whereas for various antibiotics, we have some theory as to why they work.
There are some theories for aspirin.
Okay, but
I don't know. The theories they have, that's the reason, right?
Right. Okay.
And so what's his conclusion?
So therefore, for the Rambam, now, of course, for us, the Rambam giving two contradictory explanations to the same phrase is perfect, because that reflects the modern position, but it's certainly not a logically consistent position. And he therefore attacks the Rambam. He says, you can't have it both ways. Does Mishum Refuah mean something that has a scientific explanation, or does Mishum Refuah mean something which works? And therefore he rejects the Rambam's theory. And it's a pretty bad tshuva, but it has a beautiful redeeming end to it, which I can read to you, because it's a marvelous, and it puzzled me for a long time, this ending, but now I have. This is the Rashba.
So I'm running out of time. I have a lot more to say. I guess we'll continue next week. But I'm running out of time. Od yesh li makom iyun b'divrei haravza. Furthermore, I have an entirely different question about what the Rambam and what Maimonides is saying. Shekatav amru b'perush kol shiyesh bo mishum rufua ein bo mishum darkei ha'amori. The interpretation of the phrase, anything that is medical is not magic, kol ma sheyigzeru ha'iyun hatid'ihu mutar, zulato asur. Anything that has a scientific explanation is permissible, and things which do not have a scientific explanation are prohibited. Ba'ani shoel, k'mistapek b'divrei ha'ratza. I will now ask, as someone who's pondering over what the Rambam said, mahu ha'davar sheyikru ha'rav zal sheyigzeru ha'inyan hatid'ih. What is this notion that the Rambam has something that has a that is a consequence of scientific explanation? Im mashi yigzuru iyun chachmim chachamim shechibru sfarim b'teva ka'aristo b'galenus v'chavrehem? Does something that has a scientific explanation mean something that's written in the book of Aristotle or Galen and their associates, shechibru sfarim b'teva hasamim v'amasa'adim hamo'ilim l'fi iyunam, that they wrote various books on medicine. V'chol masher lo hisig iyunam hu b'kal yisur darkei ha'mori, and anything that Galen was unaware of or Aristotle was unaware of is automatically magic. L'fi she'iyun chachamim elu she'shtadlu v'chachmat ha'teva kolel kol masher efshar li'yot po'al. Does the investigations of Galen and Aristotle represent the end of all kol bal teva b'tivo, the extreme possibilities of knowledge of science? Ve'etzel iyun chachamim elu yipasek mi'efshirut ha'iyun ha'tivi, and beyond what was known to these great men, no further scientific knowledge for Hamas. Ze be'emet ma she'lo yukablu ha'seh. This is completely unacceptable. Ki bi'emet ha'dvarim ha'po'alim b'sgula, ein pu'ulatam b'pela mehem, ela b'teva musudav. Things which act according to an occult property, and remember, Aristotle refused to accept anything which was not visible to the five senses. And, but he says, things which act by occult properties is not wondrous, it's just part of their occult properties. Ripsoni lomar, teva lo yasiyunu iyun ha'chachamim. Things can have certain properties which cannot be understood on the basis of these sages. Ulai afilo ha'chacham she'v'chachamim lo'ol ve'elam ha'teva ahu mikval ha'mon ha'oshi mitzad shehu adam. Things which are completely unknown even to these great scientists simply because of the fact that they're so rare. Kisgulat ha'even ha'sho'evet ha'sha'barzel kofetz alem. Like the magnet which the magnetic rock which the iron jumps towards it. The Yoter Mizeh Mugal B'Yodei HaYam Ba'aniyot, people who go down to the sea in ships, Tochvim Machat V'Hatichat Eitz Tzaf Al Pnei HaMayim, they stick a needle into a cork which is floating on the water, Umarin Lo Even V'Yishot Al Pnei HaMayim Ad She'yifaneh Al Pi HaSadan V'Sham Yanuach. It will turn in the water until it faces the North Pole and then it will rest. V'lo yasig iyun teva ze kol chacham b'shachachamim elu shel chachmat ha'teva. All of the Aristotelian physicists would not be able to explain this on the basis of Aristotelian tests. V'im kein af kol haminim balei askulot ha'teva hei polim k'samim elukim esabim. So that's an absolutely brilliant attack on Aristotle. In fact, he anticipated, in some sense, the major attack against on Aristotelian physics came 3 centuries later with the, and originated precisely from the existence of electricity and magnetism. And in some way, not rudimentary, it's an absolutely perfect way. There's a magnet has no explanation on the basis of Aristotelian physics. This was an explanation that did not come into a Western science until about 3 centuries later. And I always wondered where the Rashba actually knew magnitudes. This puzzled me because, you know, I wondered about this, and right. So I used to ask around, and I never got a good explanation. And then one day I ran into my friend Moshe Ebel, and I asked him about this. And he said it's obvious because the Kabbalists were always worried about the notion of the throne of God. How is it possible that God could be supported by sitting on a throne? And in one of the early Kabbalistic texts, it said that it's not that God is sitting on the throne, but the throne is attracted to God like a magnet attracts metal to it. So that therefore, the Rashba most likely learned about the existence of this physical phenomenon from his Kabbalistic studies rather than from the scientific studies. And however, he made absolutely marvelous use of it here, because he pointed out that this is a threat to the entire Aristotelian system. And within Western...
And what about the compass?
Well, he knew about the compass. This was then part of the tradition. Obviously, they learned about it from somebody, showed somebody a compass, a magnet, and so on and so forth. But I'm saying that this was not an isolated, obscure piece of knowledge, but rather something that had a prehistory here. But the fact that the Rashba made perfect use of this to draw the question that the Rambam was incapable of asking, namely, is Aristotelian physics correct, even... I remember that the Rambam attacked Aristotelian physics and on its role above the moon. That is, he was well aware of the fact that Aristotle was incorrect as far as his astronomy was concerned, and the Ptolemaic astronomy was a lot better than Aristotelian astronomy. But he accepted wholesale, without question, all of Aristotle's physics and biology and philosophy, and whatever objections one may have to the Ramban and to all of this magic, it is a fact that the advent of modern science came through magical practices and magic in the 14th and the 15th century. That is, the history of science consisted of a rejection of Aristotelian physics, passing to a great extent through this whole issue of the investigation of occult properties, magic, and so on and what have you, and came out of it in the 16th century with the modern scientific revolution. But the notion of the occult played a key role in the scientific revolution, and this Tripura of the Rashba is a beautiful exposition of that mentality in its formation.
I am not sufficiently familiar with Aristotelian physics to know what is this such a good thing contradicts.
It contradicts, according to Aristotle, there are no properties that material have which cannot be observed by the five senses. Right. No such thing as occult properties. It was this general rejection of magic.
But can't you say observe it by seeing it go to the...
But this is not it's not a property that a magnet has that's visible to any of the five senses, and therefore doesn't exist according to Aristotle.
And it's still a current issue. Before the time, this 12-year-old girl won the Western High Scholarship. She proved that the people who divine by putting their hands over the skin of the person to catch the vibration are not making decisions any better than chance alone. And it was a simple high school experiment that he performed, he proved them wrong. There's a whole colorful contention, you know, and there's all kinds of experienced practitioners. Remember now what it's called. That's your term.
Well, there's animal. There's certainly
picking up the vibration.
Animal magnetism. We'll come to a trip of on animal magnetism.
I mean,
next week.
But that was
that was
2 weeks ago.
Right. Right. But I must say that that what he does to Freudian psychology is no less convincing. Yeah, this is a great book. We'll continue on this subject, I think, one more.
There was a whole...